Hello, and welcome to the Should I Go See It podcast, where every other Friday we take a deeper dive into the one-sentence reviews on shouldigoseeit.com. This week we'll be discussing Blink Twice, The Crow, Afraid, and Kinds of Kindness. I'm your host, Bill George. With me today, as always, AJ Rebecki and super producer Craig Stanton.
Hello. How are ya?
How's everyone doing?
Good. I actually made two episodes in a row, so I'm... If you want to send me an edible arrangement or some sort of cake.
Yeah, new streak begins.
Two in a row, baby. No, I'm good, Bill. I'm good. An exciting weekend because the NFL season kicks off today. And I think we're all football fans and we're ready for some football.
Bum, 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 bum.
Funny you do that. I actually re-listened to that episode the other day when last year when we power ranked all the theme songs.
That's a great one. Go back and listen if you haven't.
Yeah,
I thought you were going to say you're excited just because it is fall. It is starting to feel autumnal. Oh, we've had some crisp mornings the last couple mornings. I know you love it.
So fucking crisp. Yeah, I was over. Once I got back from vacation and I was on the Cape for 2 weeks, I was like, man, I don't want to ever see the sun ever again. I don't want it to be above 78 degrees ever again.
I think you might get your wish. I don't know.
The mornings are nice and crisp. Sweatpants. Oh, sweatshirts. Ugh. You can put on the, start bulking up and no one's like, ew, he's gross. Because like you just cover up everything. You know, yep. It's great.
Perfect.
It's great. How are you two?
Good, good. Summer is over, and I did not go to the beach once. Maybe the first time in my life. I don't know. Weird. Never worked out. Again, not a summery summer for me. And but I'm excited to get into fall. Excited to get into fall. But not, weird. Not a lot going on.
It's a weird thing, Bill, because you've spent the last year and a half, 2 years reinventing your physical form. Sure. I feel like the beach would be a perfect time for you to just go there and start blasting shirt off and popping nips.
Yeah, I mean, would feels if like a I missed had opportunity. The opportunity. Yeah, it is.
You did
a
the hard part.
Yeah,
the easy part was just driving to a beach and being like, "Here I am."
Yeah, AJ, you're right. I do. I look great. I feel great. But I have not had a chance to show it off. I don't know. The beach for me, I'm never gonna plan a beach trip on my own. I don't know why. It's just not. I don't have like a spot. I don't have like a place. I don't have a usual hang. Mm. But if I am invited to a beach, I'll certainly go. And nobody in my circle ended up making any big beach plans. So it just never panned out.
Here's the thing, though. Let's look on the bright side. Ready for this?
Yep.
Is that now that you're in a tone, a physical tone of yourself?
Sure. Yep.
Is that like if you went to Miami in January or Vegas next week, like you don't have to put in the extra work. You're not fucking ripping butts and eating cottage cheese to the model diet to like, you know, drop 30 pounds. You're ready to fucking start breaking bottles wet nips. You know what I mean? Like just getting really weird with it. So I think you're in a good spot.
Yeah, I'm lean and mean and I'm maintaining. Like now it's maintenance. So.
The only thing to worry about there is whether the people of Miami can handle the downright fluorescent skin tone.
The reflection would be problematic.
It'd be like holding like a 5'11" a photo reflector walking down the beach.
I would need to. I mean, it would take a little bit of time.
Planes would crash, and like cruise ships would start coming towards the sand.
I would need to get a base in there. I would need to kind of figure that out for sure.
You'd have to spray tan yourself. Yeah, Craig, what do we got?
Boys, I'm excited for football, and. I know this is not a sports podcast, but I will say that my Red Sox died. They're dead.
Yeah.
It's over.
Ooh, sorry, bud.
It's over. Week, it's like final nail was put in the coffin, like literally last night, in my opinion. And so I want to say, you know, I mean, I'll still watch. I'm a 162 guy. I'm a sicko. I'll still watch, but it just won't be fun. But I'll say it was better than I thought it was going to be. They got me to football. They got people from...
Yep.
The finals, you know, to the start of football season. So I thank them for their service, and I can't wait to relive this this season, which was more fun than I thought it was going to be in a Netflix documentary sometime next year, I assume.
Is there going to be compelling Netflix storylines out of this? Or
I think
are the
so.
Netflix brass like kicking themselves that didn't pick another team?
Oh, I think enough has happened this year in terms of player ups and downs, some cool moments. Like, yeah, I think there's plenty there to to turn into some compelling content. Anyways, good times. Anyway, that's all. Yeah.
Okay.
What have you been watching, AJ? What have you been up to?
Okay. Bill, hold on to your britches. I went to the movies. I went to a movie theater.
Let's
go. In the middle of a day.
Golf clap.
12 p.m. on a Sunday. And I watched Alien Romulus.
I'm so happy.
Oh, God, it was so fucking good.
It was so good. I am still rattled you actually made it to the theater. God bless. Congratulations.
Can I tell you two things that I'm just so... So there's a Regal Theater 5 minutes from my house. I've lived here 4 years. I've never been there. I either go with you to Framingham or to all of us to Somerville. And I was like, all right, we'll go to Regal. My friends were like, hey, it's easy for you. You have two kids, father of two. So I go to Regal. First thing I walk in, they're a Pepsi facility. And Diet Pepsi is my favorite soda of all time. So right off the bat, I'm like, oh, I get a nice cold Diet Pepsi. Like, I'm already, it's already the best day ever, you know?
Yeah.
And then their candy choice was just bar none. I mean, truly an amazing selection in the concessions.
See, and what'd you go with?
We don't have to go. We don't have to do that. I got a little sampler.
You can't say that it's amazing selection. Not
maybe some Twizzlers, maybe some Buttercrunch, a couple of Reese's, and a thing of Kit Kats.
Did you have to take out another mortgage on the house? Or
I think I picked up the concessions because my friend bought the ticket, and I think for the three of us, it was like $87 in food and bev.
Insane.
But anyways, Romulus.
Those are like Kentucky Derby prizes.
I know.
Worth it.
What a movie, Bill. What a movie. What a
film. So good.
Yeah. Everything about it, I love. There's a couple things. The things that you knocked on were the things that I knocked on. The fan service at times was a little heavy-handed.
Yeah.
But it was like the perfect way to continue the franchise without burying Ridley for the work he did for Prometheus and Covenant, but also paying good respect, amazing respect to the first three or four movies of the franchise. It was just a perfect balance. Yep. The practicals were amazing. The set design was incredible. The gore was out of control. And then being able to fill in the storylines of what we figured out in Prometheus in terms of like what came first, chicken and the egg, like where did the alien come from? What's our connection to it? Like they just did a good job of wrapping it all into a good package in a summer blockbuster that just felt really fun to be in the theater with. I don't know.
That's awesome.
That's my take.
Was it a full house? Already into it?
No, dude. There was maybe six other five other pods of either couples or friends together. So we basically had the whole theater to ourselves.
Okay, that's good.
But there was times where there was like audible gasps from everybody.
Love that.
And you're like, oh God. There was a couple times I had like looked through my eyes because I was being a little bitch and I couldn't see. but other than that, 10 out of 10.
Love it.
10 out of 10. 10 out
what
of 10.
What else?
And then I watch in anticipation of you going to see the movie tonight. I rewatched Beetlejuice. Maybe 12 years, 15 years since I've seen it. Could have been more. Could have been 20 years. What a weird fucking movie!
It's an all-timer, and I've thought about rewatching it, but then it just plays in my head because I basically have it memorized because I loved it so much as a kid and watched it so many, many, many times because it's phenomenal.
It's phenomenal.
Keaton's performance is one of the greatest comedic performances out there ever.
And he's only on screen for 17 minutes, 15 minutes, which is one of those Anthony Hopkins, Hannibal Lecter things.
Yeah.
You know? Whoa. Yeah. So what made me rewatch it is A, the new film's coming out.
Yep.
As you listen to this podcast, but B, the What Went Wrong podcast that I talked to you both about, they did their episode on Beetlejuice and I cut the lawn and I was listening to it and I was like, oh shit. Like there was all of these cool things that they talked about. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to rewatch it now that it's fresh. And man, great podcast. And then just a super weird, funny, hilariously fucked up film that I enjoyed rewatching after 15 plus years.
And that Danny Elfman score in that movie is next level.
Dude. And so they, one more sidebar. In the podcast, they talked about it and they did a screener, right? They did one test screen that had just basically stock score just from like random people. And then they did one with a Danny Elfman full score. And like it went from the audience of being like, I don't understand this film to like, oh my God, that was amazing. That was so fun. That was like really great. So that was one of the things that sold the studio to make sure that Elfman was involved. They did his full score. And then that started the relationship between him and Tim Burton.
Man, what a difference it makes. Yeah, that's wild.
Also, have you seen Danny Elfman recently?
Once in a while, it'll pop up in an interview. Yeah,
jacked out of his fucking mind and covered in the weirdest tattoos I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh, really? I don't think I've seen that.
Hand tattoos, neck tattoos, like bars of black. He's like Moby, but cool.
Got it.
How about you, Bill?
For me, I watched the Napoleon Director's Cut. So Ridley Scott added 40 minutes back into Napoleon that had been cut. And so it was a 3 hour and 40 minute, there's 3.5 hour cut of Napoleon.
No. Okay.
And I enjoyed Napoleon, but I had issues with it. And I was really hoping when I saw the director's cut, I knew it was going to add in some more battle stuff. And I knew it was going to add in some more background from about Josephine. And so I was like, all right, let's see if this helps solidify the movie and maybe give me new appreciation for it. But honestly, what they added back in did not make a discernible difference, unfortunately. There were some more battle scenes, and I feel like they also added some more graphic deaths to some of the battle scenes, so it made it a little more hardcore, and that was cool. But all the added content about Josephine and her background is like fine, but it really didn't change much about my feeling on the movie, which is still that it's good, but it is... it's so close to being great, but doesn't get there. And it's a shame because it's one of those movies where any individual scene, if you just took it by itself, feels like it works and it's really well made. But then for some reason, when you put it all together, it just doesn't quite click.
Did you?
But I wanted to give it a shot and I did. So
I was going to say, did you raw dog the whole thing? Did you go through 3 hours and 40 minutes straight, or did you split it up over a few days, or...
I did it in one night. I mean, I paused to use the restroom and maybe eat briefly, but no, I did the whole thing.
Rehydrate.
I just went for it. Yeah.
Yeah,
for
right? It.
So I did that. Ridiculous. And then I also did a rewatch of Michael Mann's seminal classic, Heat.
Ooh.
Wow.
Stop. Still maybe my favorite movie ever. And I did that because I recently recorded an episode of the Media Lit podcast.
Hey.
So when you were out, we had Chris Ingersoll from that show come on and guest host this show. And then he invited me to be on their show. And so as the guest, you have to come with your piece of media that you want to dissect ready to go. And of course, I chose Heat. And so we did I don't know how much it's going to get cut up, but we recorded for 2 hours at least, just digging into...
Just no respect for their listeners.
When is the release date?
Don't know. They're going to edit together, and I will let you know when it is out. I'm sure we'll share it everywhere, and it's going to be great. But it was a lot of fun talking to them. I thank them, Chris and Randy, for having me on. It was a blast. And I'm really excited for people to hear it.
What if they cut it down to like a tight 20 minutes? Would you be pissed?
I mean, it's their show. They do whatever they want. I just came That's in true. And shared my thoughts and my expertise, and we had a lot of fun talking about it. And they had not seen Heat, and they made a great point, which was they watched it for me as opposed to both of you, my podcast, Flesh and Blood, who still refused to watch it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I digress. It was great. So again, thank you to them for having me, and we'll let you know when the show's out.
Here, I'm going to make a deal with you, Bill. I'm going to make a deal.
Okay.
I'm a deal. Let's you deal. Are a man of your word, and you've watched several films that I've told you to watch. Mm-hmm. End of the month, I'm going on a very short trip. I will pop it on my computer, and I will watch it on a plane. It won't be on a TV, but it'll have enough time for me to sit down and watch it in completion.
Ooh, I don't know about this compromise. I don't know. I almost would rather wait till we can do a Sigsy live event and rent a theater and I'll watch together. I still think that's a possibility.
Or alternative plan. Yep. Bill, you lend your Vision Pro to AJ. so he can go full goggles, full 60-foot screen on the plane, full immersion. We got no issues.
No, because then he'd have to pay for someone to like do like a hazmat cleanup on it when I returned it to him. Because I'm doing a full test drive if that's the fucking case.
Stop. Anyway, we'll take this one offline. We'll decide how that's going to work. Craig, you watch anything?
Yeah, I decided to stay in the Mad Max universe Furiosa.
Yeah.
And really, I'll make this quick. My one big takeaway about said Mad Max universe is that I don't care for it. Don't like it. I think it's kind of goofy, not in a good way. I'm just not a fan of the world that they've built. I think they've done a very good job of building this world. I don't know. It's just too much. It's too much. I get too lost and sort of sidetracked mentally thinking about the wild impracticality of all the things that they're doing.
Sure.
And like how this all works, like there's like the three cities, the one that makes the gas, one that has a bunch of water, one that makes bullets, but like no one seems to have guns. How is the bullets equally as valuable as the gas? Also, no one really has cars. There's a couple of people who have cars, but like the hordes of humanity don't. So it's just, I don't know. I get spun out in the world they're building. The guitar guy pisses me off. Where's he getting power for the amps? He's got a generator or something. Like,
The whole civilization relies on.
Did we convert a guitar amp to run directly off of a combustible engine?
Generac generator? Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the world. I thought Furiosa was cool and fun, and it went places, and it was a good time. But I'm just not into the Mad Max thing. I don't think
you should do this just to round out this Mad Max thing. You should watch one of the original Mad Maxes.
Should I? Are they
from the 80s?
I've never actually seen those, to be honest. Personally,
I think we should do it. Want to do it?
Maybe.
Okay. Maybe we'll take it offline. All right, boys, what's in the news? In the news. This week, the AV Club polled their writers and asked them to name their favorite TV pilot of all time.
I thought they fired all the writers and replaced them with AI.
Yeah, well, the good ones. They fired the good ones, as Bill would say.
They got new ones.
A few of the ones that were selected were Twin Peaks, Hannibal, Community, 30 Rock, and The Shield. So, Bill, my question is, what's your favorite TV pilot?
All right, so I got a couple I want to mention. I'll try to be quick.
Okay.
However, I also feel like this is a little unfair because I'm basically just naming the pilots of my favorite shows ever. Like, it just kind of ends up being that way. I don't really have any that stand out as a pilot. It's more so these are my favorite shows, and the first episode also happens to be really good.
Okay.
But I would say first episode of Mad Men is great.
Yep.
And the reason it's great is because of the twist, so to speak, because you have Don Draper, he's on Madison Avenue, he's drinking during the day, he's doing his thing, he sees, you know, he's got a woman in the city, and they hook up and all this stuff, and that's what you think the show is, it's that lifestyle, and then the very end of the episode, he drives home to the suburbs, and he ends up, like, kissing his kids goodnight, and he's got a wife at home, and you're like, wait, what? So I thought it was a great setup in that pilot. I also love the introduction structure of the West Wing pilot. I think that is one of the best pilots ever in terms of introducing every different fat character. And they're all referring to POTUS. And then he just shows up in the final sequence. And then you're off to the races. I think that was a great setup. And The Americans, another one of my favorite shows. The concept, like the pilot does such a good job selling the concept of the show, the inherent drama of the premise, like immediately. I just think it's really well put together as well. So yes, those are my three, basically my favorite TV shows of all time.
Okay.
But I think they all have amazing pilots.
I love that.
What about you?
I have one that came to mind was the pilot episode for HBO's The Leftovers.
Sure.
And you're kind of thrown into this post-Blink situation, and it's 3 years after the event, and you're just trying to figure out like what the fuck is going on, and they're like layering all of these different things, like you're trying to get character development from the chief and from his family, his daughter, and then there's like these other characters that are getting pulled into this world, and then like the kind of reveal of like losing his wife and this weird, not because she died but because she's part of this you know, religious event. Faction, you know, anti-event people. And you're like, what the fuck is this? And it just kind of draws you in. And then you're in it. You're in it for the whole ride. And it's one of those things that you always say, Bill, is that you get in as late as possible and then you get out as quick as possible. And I think that's a great example of like getting in late after the fact and like just running with it until you have to get out and you're just left with like this kind of like awe of what did I just get myself into.
It's a hell of a 3-season series for people that haven't seen it, like, because it was kind of slept on at the time. I know it has a lot of critical love since, but I still think a lot of people missed it and haven't gone back. So definitely highly recommend.
Another one from the world of HBO is the pilot episode of True Detective, when you're in this like Southern Gothic world and you're trying to figure out what's the deal with Matthew McConaughey? And you're just kind of wrapped up in this like Lovecraftian / like Southern Cajun worlds of like mystery and intrigue. And I just thought it was another way of just pulling you in and off the races.
I'll give it another shout out. It's an anthology show, so it doesn't really count as a pilot, but the fact that the first episode of Black Mirror is the one where the prime minister is forced.
I was going to say that.
Oh, really? Do you want to go?
Yeah, you fucker.
Oh, you go.
No, you go. Yeah, we're fucking pigs. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, the fact that that's the first episode is the prime minister being forced to fuck a pig on national television. The fact that show got made to begin with, and that's the show they open with, is still absurd.
Wild.
To me.
Easily, that show has a lot of crazy ass episodes, but I would argue that was like the most aggro, might be the most aggro episode of Black Mirror that there is, just in terms of the like the simplicity of it, the like, just like it's so uncomplicated. It takes place in our current world, not some like future imagined place. It's very grounded, and you're like, holy fuck,
and that's the first one.
Yeah.
Bill, this week in the Should I Go See It segment, we'll be talking about 4 films. The first film is Blink Twice. According to IMDb.com, when tech billionaire Slater King meets cocktail waitress Frida at his fundraising gala, he invites her to join him and his friends on a dream vacation on his private island. As strange things start to happen, Frida questions her reality. Bill, should I go see it?
Yes, unquestionably, yes. It is a great little thriller of a movie.
Ooh.
Loved it. I loved it.
Ooh. Zoe Kravitz, directorial debut.
Yes, Zoe Kravitz, Catwoman herself.
Yeah, friend of the show.
And it shows that she knows what she's doing. Very excited to see what else she makes after this. I loved it. I loved it. And to summarize a little bit more, talking about the story, like you mentioned, it's a woman working as a server for like a fancy venue that caters this event for a big tech company run by Channing Tatum. And they hit it off. He invites her and her friend to the private island. Everything seems too good to be true. They party. Drugs are involved. And then things are not as they seem, AJ.
Ooh, baby.
But then after that, the twists and turns are absolutely what make the movie work. So I don't want to go any further on plot specifics, but I will say it is a dark movie for sure. It's a message movie, but that's part of the fun of it, is kind of breaking down the metaphor and the social commentary of the script. And it kind of touches on social media, obsession with lifestyles of the rich and famous. And it's also just about men, women, status, wealth, power dynamics. It's really smart. And it's gorgeously shot. It's, you know, beautiful colors and contrast, tropical island. It looks great. Performances are great. It's excellent. It's excellent.
I got a question, Bill.
Yeah.
You recently, as of late last year, had said that you're over this whole like eat the rich satire, eat the rich kind of films. Does this fall into that camp? Kind of sounds like it does.
Did I say that?
100%.
Yeah, I forget what movie it was in reference
to. Well, I hated that movie, The Triangle.
Yeah, and you were like, it's the one on part the boat, of a right? broader yeah. thing of this whole...
I remember this.
Yeah.
I remember this.
Okay, all right. Yep. Okay, all right. Well, this is less about that. This is much more about social...
This is an eat the poor type of situation?
No, this is much more about men and women and power dynamics, I would say.
Okay.
It's much more about that. One thing that was interesting about this movie, I mentioned it's dark. There is a trigger warning at the beginning of the movie.
No.
There is. There is like a text slide that opens up the movie as a trigger warning, which I am not a big fan of. Like, I
can we figure this out? We need to figure this out right now, today,
okay,
on this podcast.
Go ahead.
Can they not just put the trigger warning as part of the rating box on the on the movie poster itself, or on the commercial?
That's my thought too. Because the MPAA puts the rating, and they added the last 20 years, they added to the right of the rating a listing of like things that contributed to that rating, like drug use or sexual acts or violence or whatever. They list those things. So you would think it would be in there. And also my thought is, because it acts essentially as a spoiler to a degree, I'm not going to share what the exact trigger warning.
That.
Yeah, I don't want to share what the exact trigger warning is. You'll see it when you see the movie, I guess, so it doesn't matter. But it does act quasi as a spoiler, especially because this whole movie starts out as them having a great time on this island, and you're like kind of waiting to see like what is the dark element. But I already have a hint of what it is because I already read that trigger warning. And so it just kind of throws it off. And I feel like if you are someone that could be that easily triggered by certain things, ideally you are researching some of these. If you think that a movie might trigger you, you would look into it ideally before you go see it. I don't know. It just feels to me like an unnecessary potential spoiler. But that being said, it's a fantastic movie. And the performances are great. I want to shout out Tatum because he gets to do like a solid range and gets to kind of show his acting chops, which is
love
great.
That.
Naomi Aki is the lead, and she's great because she is basically the audience surrogate, and we're like with her for this entire thing. And then there's also some great supporting performances from like random stars like Christian Slater, Haley Joel Osment, Gina Davis is in it in small parts. Like, this is just a great cast overall. So I loved it. Everyone should check it out for sure.
Love that. And I just realized or found out that Channing Tatum was engaged to Zoe Kravitz.
I had no idea.
No. Well, more you know.
Good for them.
Phil. Yeah. Good. Great for them. I'm so happy for them. Second film is The Crow remake. According to IMDb, soulmates Eric and Shelley are brutally murdered, period. Given a chance to save the love of his life, Eric must sacrifice himself and traverse the worlds of the living and the dead, seeking revenge. Bill, should I go see it?
No, AJ. Do whatever it takes to avoid this one.
Is it
I know the
bad?
Reviews are bad, and like I don't mean to be... like I was trying not to pile on because I knew the reviews were so bad, but I can't help it. It is awful. And I just don't understand how they messed it up this bad. Because to me, if you're going to make a new Crow movie, you basically have two equally viable options. You either go like full fan service and you make it a nostalgia trip and you use the same story, maybe some of the same music, same costume, and you kind of like play that up and just make it modern. Or you take the Crow concept and you remake it as like a John Wick movie. And that was kind of what they're trying for, and they fail miserably. The movie just doesn't work. It doesn't work. And part of that is because the entire movie is premised on the love of these two characters, and that's supposed to drive really the movie, but there is zero chemistry, zero believability. It just, I don't even know. AJ, it's hard to even put into words.
Wow.
It was awful. It doesn't work. It doesn't work at all.
I mean, it's hard because it's been a while since I've watched the first Crow, so I can't tell you the good, bad, and the ugly. But it just seems like if you're going to remake a film as iconic as The Crow, I feel like you would want to do it in a way that doesn't tarnish the original, but gives you like the applause that you like remade a film in a way that's amazing. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like they did it bad both ways.
It's just, it doesn't, and my other issue is it takes so long for him to become the Crow. Like, he doesn't really act as the Crow until like halfway through the movie. It's basically the third act that he's fully crowing, if I may. The amount of time that he
pre-crows,
we needed a higher crow quotient or a quotient, if I may. And so it's just, the movie doesn't work. In the first movie, he's introduced as the Crow like in the opening. They like kill off the girlfriend and he and him, and then he comes back immediately because he's so distraught. This movie, they take all this time to show them in the relationship, and they don't sell it well.
A lot of pre-crow.
He finally dies, and then he becomes the crow. And there's also sequences where he is in the afterlife being mentored.
Oh, the post-crow.
Yeah. And this is these mentoring scenes. When you need an actor to come in and be like your guide to the afterlife in this sequence like this, ideally you need Ian McShane. Like, that's who you really want. But I'll also take like a John Turturro or an F. Murray Abraham. Like, you need a star to just like anchor that one role. And instead they just have some no name and it like does not help. I will give it some props, which is that the action, there's like only honestly two action sequences, which is another issue, is not nearly enough action for a movie that's supposed to be bent on revenge. But the action they do have is actually pretty well staged, pretty well choreographed, violent. I don't really have any complaints about the action itself. So like I'll give them some credit there. Anyway, also they don't use any like heavy metal or dark music in this movie, which is like part of the whole point of the original, which had a best-selling soundtrack. I don't get it. If you're trying to make a new Crow movie, why are you not making it like a Crow movie? It's just...
because they're focusing on the pre-Crow and then the
post-Crow. If you want to see a movie where Skarsgård like fucks people up, just watch Boy Kills World, which was a movie we reviewed a few weeks ago. Better action. It's more of it. It's a more unique premise and it's doing something different versus this is just a John Wick ripoff with Crow face paint, basically.
There you go, folks.
Dude, the original Crow soundtrack is sick.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, what's on it?
Well, just
Craig,
a couple samplings of bands. You got The Cure, Stone Temple Pilots, Rage Against the Machine, the Rollins Band, that is Henry Rollins Band, Pantera, Nine Inch Nails, Violet Femmes, Helmet, Jesus and Mary Chain, to name a few. Fucking sick.
That's what it was known for. This movie does not use anything like that.
Flies in the Vaseline wheel. He's fucking cutting people's heads off. Okay, the next film from the studio that brought you Megan, or as I called Mathegan, comes the movie Afraid, which originally, Bill, it's noted on the IMDb page that it was the AI in Afraid was supposed to be capitalized, but they changed it. According to IMDb.com, the Curtis family is selected to test a new home device, a digital assistant called AIA. Am I saying that right? Or is it like Aya?
Aya.
Oh my God. Aya, also known as Computer Mathegan, learns the family's behaviors and begins to anticipate their every need. And she can make sure nothing and no one gets in her family's way. Bill, dumb. Should I go see it?
Yes, AJ.
Oh! What?
Oh, this is a yes for me.
What? You just got Mathorgand?
I gave it a yes.
Mathugand?
I went out there. I saw the movie.
Yeah.
I loved it. I enjoyed
no,
it.
No, you're
I gave
fucking
it a yes.
trolling me. You're trolling
and then
me.
And then I read other reviews and I saw AV Club gave it like a D-. And I was like, oh shit, I might be on the wrong side of this fence. But I stand by it and I give it a yes.
Okay, keep talking. This looks so dumb,
yeah.
Dude.
Go.
No, this is a Hollywoodized film length episode of Black Mirror. That's what it is. And my favorite subgenre of sci-fi is technology run amok. And that's what this movie is. And I love that for it.
Okay.
Couple things. First of all, John Cho, like appreciation post. John Cho is phenomenal. Always sure. is. He's great in everything he does.
Amazing jawline. Hair doesn't move. He's just a handsome fuck.
He is, and he's got this naturalistic style of acting that I love, and it works so well for horror. And then Catherine Waterson also. There was a scene that had me welling up. I was like in tears. And this is like a PG-13 schlocky high-concept horror movie. No way I'm supposed to be crying in this movie, but
no
she
way.
Got
yeah.
me.
Well, I think
she
we need me. To talk
Ain't
about
no
that offline. Yeah, that's no way. Okay.
We also get Dave DeSmalchin playing a creep, which is always a plus.
This guy...
We love it.
I don't even see him in the cast list. Oh, I do see him in the cast list. His name's Lightning.
It is a perfect length. It extrapolates on the idea of like an AI home assistant and then just like expands out.
Yeah.
It goes beyond the stuff in Mathegan, gets more into commentary on the internet, deep faking, quantum computing. They touch on a lot of things. They cleverly use lots of AI generated imagery. The whole thing, I think, is really clever, as long as you don't kind of stop and think about it too hard. But as the movie
goes,
you're
good. Is it set in the future or is it set in the present?
The present.
Okay. Oh, wow. Can I ask you a question?
Uh-huh.
Why is it PG-13? Like, couldn't it have been much better if it was just R?
Sure. I mean, I made the same argument about Megan as well.
Vegan.
The thing about this is it is not scary. Like, if you are thinking about seeing this because it's a horror movie, that is a mistake. It is not scary at all. There's like two scenes at night, a couple jump scares. There is like a boogeyman element that's probably the weakest part of the movie. So that is not it. It is scary conceptually and thematically.
Yeah.
But it is not a good horror movie. But as a tech run amok, Black Mirror type thing, I loved it. I thought it was fun. I thought the ending was great. It is definitely based on tech in the moment, so it will not age well. Like, if you watch this in 5 years, it's probably not going to be great. It's definitely a time capsule, like some of these tech movies are. But I loved it, and I also appreciated there is a side of it where they show the positives of this AI assistant. And so I like that they show like what AI could do in a positive light as well before they get into like it becoming sentient and fucking killing people. So I just thought it was a really well executed little sci-fi movie. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I know people are hating on it. I know there's a lot of plot holes, yada, yada, yada. And it's not scary. I get all that. But I love tech run amok. I do.
Okay. Hour 24 Crazy. Minutes.
Crazy.
Build stamp of approval.
All right. I think it's going to be on Max some night and you're going to throw it on and I think you might dig it.
The last film is Kinds of Kindness. According to IMDb.com, a man seeks to break free from his predetermined path. A cop questions his wife's demeanor after her return from a supposed drowning, and a woman searches for an extraordinary individual prophesized to become a renowned spiritual guide. Bill, should I go see it?
No. Please don't. This is a three-story anthology movie where they use the same actors but in different roles, and they tell three different stories with the same actors. And like, they literally have like an end credits for each one. And it's like three movies kind of stitched together. And it's 2 hours and 44 minutes to tell those three stories. And none of them are worth watching.
Whoa.
It is bad.
How bad is it?
I watched this movie at home and I still almost walked out. I almost walked out of my own home. Like, that's
so dramatic. You are just a lover of the dramatics. Okay.
That's how bad it was. It is already streaming because it came out. So this is the next movie by Yorgos Lanthimos, and it came out right after Poor Things. So he did Poor Things, huge hit, Oscar winner, yada, yada, yada. And then this came out really soon after, had a very limited theater release, and it's already streaming on Hulu right now. And it is obvious to me that his Oscar success and overall success has reached a point where there is nobody in this process ever telling him no. Like, that's what it feels like. And he's just making this movie that is so weird and so bad and is not interesting. And I'm always kind of hit or miss on Yorgos to begin with. Like, I love the first half of The Lobster. I really like The Favorite. There are parts of Poor Things I liked, but I didn't like Sacred Deer. I didn't like the second half of The Lobster. And now I hated this. And it's a shame. The performances are strong. I mean, everybody in it is super talented, but the script for me was not there. None of the three stories grabbed me. The runtime was unconscionable. The pacing was glacial. And I literally, like, midway through the second story, I need to use the restroom. So I hit pause. And so it brought up the timeline and I found out I wasn't even halfway done and my jaw dropped. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. So not a fan.
He said aloud to himself in his own
literally. And the other thing that annoyed me, if I can just go on a tangent for a second, they try to do this thing with the music where it's a lot of individual piano key strikes during tense moments, like Eyes Wide Shut. And it's like, you, sir, are not Eyes Wide Shut. And that bothered me.
Yeah, he's a weird dude, man. His films are all like this weird, like goofy, quirky characters, dark humor, weird, sterile environments. Like, it's one of those instances, right? This vibe with me, where people will be like, a studio head or producer will be like, that man's a genius. And you'll be like, oh, really? Tell me why he's a genius. And they just say, well, it's Yorgos. Like, his ethos, everything about him is genius. And it's like, you can be fucking answer why he's genius. The guy's weird, a weirdo.
Yeah.
Is a fucking weirdo. And I agree, he can do some cool stuff. Yeah. Yeah, and you're like, cool. But like, at the end of the day, you're like, this shit's fucking weird.
Everybody is bought into it. Like, this is another one where I did my review and then I pulled the AV Club and they gave it an A-. And it's like, to the non-cinephile, to a normal person, it would not be enjoyable whatsoever. And even to me as a cinephile, I also found it not enjoyable whatsoever. But there are critics out there that loved it because they have to, because it's Yorgos. I don't know.
Ivory Tower.
It was bad, man. It was real bad.
Yorgos, bro.
And you hate to say it when it's so well executed and everybody's doing their best and the actor's doing their best, but it doesn't come.
And then you look, you're like, hey, let me tell you something. You're like, what? And you're like, hey, what if I told you a movie that had Willem Dafoe, Emma Stone, and Jesse Plemons was dog shit? You'd be like, well, go fuck yourself. How is that possible? Right?
Yeah, no, it is. It is.
Like, come into my Yorgos lab.
It starts with what's on the page and it ain't there.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Netflix and Bill. What are we watching on the small screen? Well, the medium screen, or the boob tube, as it used to be called. Bill?
I'm already fired up, so I'm going to go with one that is bad. I want to talk about Untold, the newest Untold. So Untold is the Netflix sports docs, and this one is about the Michigan sign-stealing scandal, and it might be the dumbest sports documentary I've ever seen.
And like the scandal from last year?
Yes. And, you know, sports docs, y'all know me. Y'all know how I make a living. I love me a good sports doc. But this one did not work. It is, first of all, I don't care about college sports generally. There's like three topics in the world that are the least interesting to Bill George. College sports, astrology, and crypto. Like, those three, nothing about any of those are interesting.
Put it on the dating profile. You won't.
But when college sports are in documentary form, sometimes they're really well done and I eat it up.
Okay.
But this one is so dumb. First of all, this shit happened last year. It's not like some amazing historical event that we have fresh perspective on. It just happened. More importantly, it's about sign stealing, which I think is a dumb topic to begin with because who cares? Thirdly, they still won even after he got booted mid-season. So did the sign stealing even matter? And if so, why are we telling a documentary about it? And then finally, my last point, they go on to share that there is signs in college because in college they don't have microphones in the helmets where they can like communicate, or speakers in the helmets to communicate with the coaches. So they have to do signs. And I'm sitting there for this whole documentary being like, well, why don't they just put, college is basically like NFL anyway at this point. Why not just put speakers in the helmets? So they go through this entire 2-hour documentary about sign stealing. And then at the end, there's a text slide that says, starting in 2024, they're putting speakers in the helmets. Problem solved. So I'm like, why did I just watch this documentary then?
As you're going through each point, I have like a counterpoint ready to go. And you just nail them all. Well, to point 3B. Right.
Yeah.
Harbaugh left the NCAA and is now the coach of the fucking Chargers. He's not even in college football anymore.
Unsanctionable.
Yeah. And one of the funniest things I've ever seen on ESPN or SportsCenter tweeted out was like, charge your phone. And I was like, nah, charge my helmet. And it was like in the coach's hotel room on an away game. And they had all of the 5 helmets that were live, all connected to the USB-C and then plugged into fucking iPhone chargers on the floor of their hotels, like a bunch of fucking scrubs.
Yeah, it was just a worthless documentary.
Oh, God, I love when you're fired up.
The fact they put so much production value and effort into it to make it like, oh my God, this 30 for 30 style important event. And I was like, are you shitting me with this?
Yeah. Awful, if you want a good college documentary, watch the Gator Swamp documentary.
Oh, I don't think I have watched that one yet because I think it's long, isn't it?
There's
like 2 parts or something. I haven't gotten to it.
Is that with all the crimes?
That's basically
all got arrested.
The Gators, like in
Brandon Spikes.
2004 through 11 or something like that. Gainesville, Florida was literally Grand Theft Auto, like in a 10-mile radius. Strippers, money, booze, murder, arrest, fucking dude, everything. Cops were on payroll.
The Urban Meyer Florida Gators were basically an organized crime.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
I got to check that out. I got to watch that one.
Okay.
And then the last thing for me is my Thrones rewatch. I just finished season 7. And to comment on that, 7 is not bad. It is different. It feels different for sure. But I would not yet say that the show is bad. It is just different because we are in like Hollywood blockbuster mode. It is very clear that they are trying to end the show. Yeah. And so they are treating it like a Hollywood blockbuster, which means some of the action sequences are some of the best in the show. Like the dragon attack on the loot trains and the when they go beyond the wall to capture one of them and they get saved by the dragons. Like there are some incredible action sequences in season 7. And some really good scenes too. But it doesn't feel like the same show because the direction is way flashier. Again, it like looks more like a Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
Which doesn't feel as workmanlike as the direction of the previous episodes. And they're no longer spending 3 days on the King's Row getting to know the characters because we know the characters. All the characters are in place. We are just trying to get to the end. But when you have that many inevitable confrontations between these characters in a row, it just makes it feel different from so much of the rest of the show. So I get why 7 is when people start to hate on it, but I will say if you try to look at it objectively and you understand that it is the climax of a big Hollywood production, it's not that bad. It's pretty enjoyable overall. Now, when I get to 8, we'll see what shakes out. But I'm going to give a little more credit to 7 than I have in the past. I'm not going to necessarily throw it out with 8. I think 7 does have some redeeming qualities upon more, you know, examination.
How does 7 end? Is that the when they're in the boat? Him and Danny are in the boat?
John and Danny are making love in the boat, yes.
In the boat, okay.
The real end is the zombie dragon knocking down the wall at Eastwatch and the Army of the Dead making it past the wall.
Yeah. Okay. And that sets us up for the long
which
night.
Which is also an amazing scene and a great ending. So yep. There's a lot of good qualities, but does it feel different from the rest of the show? Absolutely. But it kind of has a reason to because it's getting to the end. So I'm going to give it a little more credit, but I'll come back to you with season 8 recap next show, I'm sure.
Heard, Chef.
What have you been watching?
I watched one made-for-TV movie. I watched The Instigators on Apple TV Plus.
And?
It's a movie.
It exists.
Tell you what, Casey Affleck and Matt Damon are doing a lot of press for that thing. I feel like I've been seeing those everywhere.
An hour-long interview on Pardon My Take on Barstool. And yeah, I was like,
they've been all over the place.
It's fun. Like, it's a Boston movie. It's fun. It's fun when people who are popular and good actors have creative control and they have their thing in Boston because they're saying random ass shit that only people from the area would understand. And you're like, I get that.
Yeah.
Casey Affleck is 1,000 times better actor than Ben Affleck. Like they're on different worlds. It's community theater versus an actual actor, Juilliard actor.
I think I learned that from Gone Baby Gone and then solidified that with Manchester by the Sea.
Manchester by the Sea. I was like, oh my God, this guy isn't a scumbag. Actor. Yeah, he's actually a phenomenal actor. But the plot, everything was just messy and dragged on for too long. And it was just awkward at times and super heavy-handed Boston sometimes. But like, it is what it is. If you want like a plain movie or like, you know, want to watch a Matt Damon movie, go for it. But, you know, it's not changing anybody's lives. You know?
Knowing the geography, were there car chases where they like turn off a Storo and all of a sudden they're somewhere else and you're mad about it?
Yeah. And they do stuff by the pier and you're like, how did you get from the pier to like, yeah, exactly what to like downtown Newton in like 7 seconds. And then they're on the fucking Zakim Bridge and you're like, how the hell did that happen? But the worst part is every time I watch a movie now, the inconsistencies in action scenes or chases is so disheartening. There's a whole scene where it's like rainy, gross, disgusting, and then it goes to beautiful sunshine instantly in the next sequence. And you're like, how did nobody, I get it. It's an action scene. you know,
you gotta shoot it across multiple days.
You gotta shoot across multiple days, and if it doesn't add up, the studio's not gonna waste the money there. They'll just make it work, and you deal with it. But like, man, there was some scenes in that where you're like, how did that ever get past somebody to be like, there's some huge continuity issues here.
Really?
But
that's too bad.
It is what it is.
Okay.
What are we watching soon? What do you got tickets for? Ticket tip! In
tickets, guys.
As of this recording, in less than 1 hour. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Woo!
I am leaving. Literally, we're hitting stop on this recording, and I'm going to my car, and I am driving to the theater to see Beetlejuice. 3 o'clock, IMAX, first show of the day. Let's go. And then the only other thing in the near term, as of today, they released a new documentary on Netflix I've been waiting for about Apollo 13. That being said, I already know everything there is to know about Apollo 13 and the Apollo program.
Yeah.
But
there's a Lego right next to you, right? Don't you have
the Saturn V rocket's right here. You know how they sometimes say, like, if you were put on the spot to have to give a lecture on a topic for 30 minutes, like right now, what could you do? Like, I could do the Apollo program easily. That being said, anytime there's new footage or new take on it, I'm going to watch it. So I'm going to see this new Apollo 13 doc and see what it brings to the table. And that will probably make me want to rewatch the film, which I adore. And then I'll probably talk about that next episode.
Love it. Enjoy Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, which they're going to have to set it up for Beetlejuice, 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 right? It's just a natural thing.
I don't know. Keaton's got a lot of city miles on him based on the footage I've seen in the commercials.
He looks great.
Does he?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll find out. I'll let you know how it is.
Hey, Godspeed. Have fun.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to the Should I Go See It podcast. Please make sure to follow on Instagram @ Should I Go See It.